You're listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today's show will be a little shorter. I had to get started a little late. We were having, again, some technical problems that we're dealing with. Hopefully in a week or two they will be solved. We're changing operating systems in about 2 weeks, and hopefully all the problems will go away because we've had trouble just recording the show. We're just not getting a signal, so even though we're recording it, there's no waveforms. So we'll deal with those technical issues. I just wanted to give you a heads up of what's happening. And we've had some schedule changes. I was supposed to be on the air yesterday, but the first Tuesday of every month, we have our board, the Board of Trustees for Richland College, and that takes precedent over everything. So that knocked me off. And we also had a change in my time slot. It looked like it was going to be on at 3. Make a long story short, we're having some schedule changes. I hope to be on the air, though, Monday through Thursday from 4 to 5. And the Fridays, we have no problems with the Friday. That will be 3 to 5. And where I have special editions, we'll definitely go over. For first-time listeners, the way you listen to my show, primarily most of my people listen to my show, if you're not listening to it right now, is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops.wordpress.com. And at the very top, you'll have a list of the more current shows. And below that, which will, if you click on it, will take you to the Podomatic site where the show will, you know, play. And you have a choice. You can either listen to it, stream it, or you can download it and save it and listen to it at your convenience. And that's what most people do. They either listen to it streaming or they download it into their iPad or whatever and listen to it when they have the time. Because most of the people that listen to the show are students and either staff or faculty here. And then during the day, or for that matter the evening, they're either going to class or presenting a class, so they don't have time to listen to it, and I understand that. And I would say almost all my listeners are listening via podcast, because this is a web radio station. It is not a commercial on-the-air radio station. I wish it was, because then I'd have a much larger audience. But it's really limited to people that are aware that we have a radio station, aware of the show, and then they have the choice when to listen to it, which makes it more convenient for them. And I also have, for every show, I have my segment notes that are information that I recommend you look at if you have time. That can be as simple as watching a YouTube video on whatever I'm talking about, or I will have photographs, charts, articles, and I'm selective about it. I don't give you everything that even though I have a lot of information on each segment, I don't give you everything I've looked at. I give you some of the information that I like. Today we had some breaking news, and I wanted to at least spend a few minutes on this. The author Tom Clancy died on the 1st of October. We still don't know why. I suspect it might have been cancer, but I don't know that for certain. Be speculation on my part, or heart failure, one of the two. He has been an author of many, many what's called a technical thrillers, and I do have some photographs of the many books he's written. He really got his big start in The Hunt for Red October, which... The break was that President Ronald Reagan mentioned that he was reading the book and liked it, and that got him really started. That was a bestseller, sold over a million copies, was made into a movie, very successful movie, and from there the rest is history. He wrote many, many other successful books. I have photographs of him as well as videos. And there are not many videos. But he did give a few interviews, and I've been able to dig them out and put them on the page. And in the most famous one, he gave an interview the day of 9/11 with Judy Woodruff. I also have that. And most of these are very brief. There's one long one that he gave in 1996. I was a little bit surprised. I would have thought he had given a lot of interviews over a period of time. I bet he did, but they're just simply not on YouTube. They were not videoed. And remember, he's been writing since the 80s. So the 80s and the 90s, YouTube really took off, about 2005, 2006, I think it started. I could be a little off on that. So unless there were, a lot of times, authors will, and I'm sure he did, he went on book tours and probably gave interviews as well as talks to people. He had book signings in the bookstores. I'm sure he did that, but apparently very few, if any, were actually videoed, and that's a shame. And I have run into this before. Sometimes you get a lot of videos for someone that's in the public eye. A lot of times you don't, though. It's very much hit and miss. I have a wiki article that's actually in the form of a video that summarizes his life or the high points of his life. So I have a lot of information there, or as much as I could find, and it's really a tribute to him. I've read many of his books over the years, and it's not for everybody, but people that like technology thrillers, military thrillers. Now, his most famous books, and they're listed, I would say the Red Hot, his very first one got a lot of attention, but he had a character, Ryan, that appeared in most of his books. He had two major characters. So what I would urge is if you're unfamiliar with him, just pick one and read it. And keep in mind at least four of his books. And I'm scrolling down. The Hunt for Red October came out in 1984. Patriot Games was 1987. And I have summaries of this. I'm not going to go over each book. Clear and Present Danger in 1989. He wrote many. Well, I'm trying to think what were his top. Patriot Games, definitely. And the Cardinal of the Kremlin in 1986. Oh, yes. The Sum of All Fears, definitely, in 1991. So if you're looking for a thriller, now I need to warn you, his books tend to be long, and you'll start reading them and you get hooked and you don't want to stop. I'd recommend starting it on a weekend and more or less set aside the weekend to read his book. I'm having the same problem with a book that I started. I'm about halfway through, but the book is about 3 to 4 inches thick. And I had to really stop because I had other things that I had to do and I haven't had a chance to get back to it. But I'm sort of warning you. I strongly recommend you read these. They're about the military, about spying, espionage, intelligence gathering, the threats to the United States. And he's very, very successful, selling millions and millions of copies. And he's also now, after being successful, he had a group of writers writing these books. And also, now he didn't make the games, but a series of games were put out based on some of his ideas. And you have several movies. So I would sample it. If you're totally unfamiliar with it, you know, definitely look. Clear and Present Danger was a favorite of mine. Dead of Honor, as well as the Hunt for Red October. So do yourself a favor. Go to, let's say, Half Price Books in Dallas. And they usually have a section in Half Price Books. I'm giving them a plug. Discounted books, fiction. It's towards the, as you go in, make a left, go all the way to the end of the store where there's a wall, and there's a corner where they have best-selling books. And you could probably get it for either $1 or $3. Most of these books, though, when they were came out originally, cost $25, $30. Almost all of them are in paperback as well. But if you're looking for a bargain, let's say you're hard-pressed for money, that's what I would do if you're in Dallas or near a Half-Price bookstore, is go there and pick one or more. And I have several, well, I used to have all of them, and then I moved and had to really get rid of most of my library, and now I'm sort of rebuilding it back up. And because it's been a while since I've read some of his works, I probably will go back and reread it. And I also have a very good picture of all the of all his books that have been out under his name. So he will be missed. He will definitely be missed. And I wanted to at least give him a salute or a tribute today and mention that. One thing I noticed, I gathered some photographs. Most of them are fairly recent photographs. One thing I noticed, he was a smoker. Now, I've never been a smoker. But my father was, and it gave him health problems. It's very, very simple. And even though he stopped for a good 20 years, now I don't know if Tom Clancy stopped. Usually, most smokers smoke for their entire lives. A few people that can actually quit usually do so after they've been smoking, you know, a good 20, 30 years. But it still has, later in life, you're going to have health problems as a result of it. And like I said, we don't know the cause of death. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's not a heart attack or lung cancer if he kept on smoking. So it's a sad note, but a tribute to a very successful author. He died. He was age 66 when he died, and he was the owner of part owner of the Baltimore Orioles. He was born, raised, went to school in Baltimore, and he died in Baltimore. I'm going to move on, and I wish Clancy had wrote more about what I'm going to talk about now, because, and it's not, Clancy was dealing with military technology, espionage, intelligence, and that's a popular genre. It's very popular with me, because I tend to read those types of novel, fiction. He was always accused of getting classified information, and he makes a point, no, I really was uninterested in classified information. What I do is connect the dots. I know there's information, whether it's technology or what the military is doing or what the State Department is doing. They're public documents that describe it. And occasionally he just not only connects the dots, but if there's a missing dot, can do that based on the information. He never saw it. And I don't know if, you know, yes, he's going to talk to ex-military people, but I think it was like many authors, they research this. And you'll be surprised what information you can get. And this is before the internet. So it's not impossible to write a so-called technology thriller, whether it's about submarines, tanks, aircraft, and espionage, spying, and basically going, yeah, the good guys, which is the United States, and the bad guys that are attacking us. He was very, very successful at it. What I want to talk next is where we're at. The CNN has a clock, the number of hours that the government is shut down. Like, I really care. They're making a big deal about this. How many hours the government is shut down? You know, I joke with a student here that it's the Communist News Network. And they're in the tank for Obama for the simple reason, what were the Democrats doing? what were the Democrats doing prior to the really shutdown? They had a clock of their own. And they're very proud of their clock. And it shows Senator Reid in front of it, and as well as other Democrats looking at their clock. You see, the dirty little secret in Washington, D.C., but the American people understand that, the Democratic Party and President Obama wanted this shutdown. They wanted the shutdown because they wanted to blame the Republican Party on it. And that's where we're at right now. We're in the blame game mode. We're a lot of finger pointing. It's your fault. No, it's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. As far as I'm concerned, it's both parties' fault. And what drives me nuts is we need to shut down the government. Big chunks of it, but not temporarily, full-time, permanently. We're on the verge of running another deficit, and we'll get the numbers in about a week, 8 days, on October 10th. The Treasury Department will publish its monthly Treasury statement. Now, they might be late. They'll blame it on the shutdown, so it might be a little bit later. But we're going to run, for the fifth year in a row, a deficit slightly less than $1 trillion. My guess, it'll be about $900 billion. Could be a little more, could be a little less. I think it's going to be under $1 trillion. I've looked at the number. I don't think it's going to go over $1 trillion, but I don't think it's going to, right now it's at $755 billion. I don't think it's going to go down. I think it's going to go up. The question is how much. I think it's fairly safe to say it'll be somewhere between $800 million on the low side and a little over $900 billion, that's what it'd be, on the high side. And that's the fifth fiscal year we've had this situation. And what a deficit means is your outlays, all government outlays, exceed total tax collections. And I don't want to beat this subject to death because I've had several shows on it. But the reason why I wanted to discuss it, I really think that this shutdown is going to be a short-term story. I would not be surprised at all by Friday or next Monday, next Monday, the government's going to be open again. And if you haven't been following this story, what happened on the 1st is President Obama ordered that non-essential employees, and those are approximately 800,000 federal employees, were furloughed without pay, told to go home. Now, in the past on these shutdowns, what tends to happen, and I think it's a bad idea, if you didn't work and you sat at home, you shouldn't be paid. But in the past, they've paid the federal employees, even though they weren't at work, they weren't doing anything, they were furloughed, told, ordered by their supervisors, non-essential employees. If you fall in that category, you're designated a non-essential employee to go home. And they did. And that really thins the traffic. Like today, there's a lot less traffic in Washington, D.C., both getting into the city and out of the city and in the city. That's a lot of people not in their cars. Now, I wish they had a permanent furlough. And 800,000 is a pretty good number. Permanently close down the departments. If you're not going to do that, then cut personnel. And I'm sure some of you say, oh, that's crazy. That's a crazy idea. No, it's not. Starting in fiscal year 2009, the deficit, in other words, we spent over $1.4 trillion more than we collected in taxes. The next fiscal year, 2010, slight improvement, but approximately $1.3 trillion. 2011, it was just under 1.3 trillion. There's a pattern here. And in the, so that's 9, 10, 11, 12 fiscal year, I'm talking fiscal years, that start 1 October and 30 September of the following year. So for fiscal year 2012, the number was, again, slightly under 1.1. I think it was like 1.08. Slightly under 1.1. And in this year, I'm fairly confident we'll be under $1 trillion. But not by much. It'll probably be in the neighborhood of $900 billion. Could be as low as $800 billion, but I think it's going to be closer to $900 billion. I could be surprised. I really could be surprised. And what we're waiting for is the numbers, the statistics. And the Treasury Department already knows this. What were the total tax collections for September? And what was the total spending, outlays, spending of the government for September? And when we get these numbers on the 8th business day, which is the 10th of October, we'll know exactly what it is. Now, what I've done until then, I have a lot of background information. And to get your attention, I have a chart at the very top that shows the U.S. national debt in nominal terms from 1900 through 2020. So you, most of that is actual, but we have about 7 years, 7 to 8 years that are actually estimates. And you could see it's really spiked up. And most of it is starting in 2000 forward. And as a result, the more debt you have, the more interest you have to pay. For fiscal year 2013, I'm looking at the table, and I think there's a mistake. It's showing the October interest. I took these numbers directly from the Department of Treasury site, and they might have made a mistake because they're showing October's numbers, which they really don't know. They're saying that the fiscal year 2013, well, yes, they do know it. Let me back off on that statement. They should have the numbers. They know what they paid through. Fiscal year 2013 ended on the 30th of September, Monday of this week, and they're saying that they've paid interest of $395 billion. Now, that's directly from the Department of Treasury. And I also have what the interest was in past years, just so you have information. Now, if you divide that by 12, you get $33 billion of interest that the Treasury is paying each month. Now, why am I emphasizing that? The President of the United States, as well as the Secretary of Treasury, a bit on television, again, trying to really scare people, that the United States could default on its debt if the national debt ceiling is not raised. And that simply is not true, ladies and gentlemen, because the average tax collections each month are approximately, they're over $200 billion. So if the interest is on average $33 billion, we have more than six times in terms of tax collections what we need to cover the interest on the debt. So there's no way the United States would default. And the first priority of any government is to pay the interest on its debt for the simple reason if they default, they're not going to be able to borrow in the future. They might be able to borrow, but at a significantly higher interest rate. So it behooves the United States government to pay the bondholders, the note holders, the treasury bill holders, the interest that's due. And that's what's going to happen. No matter what they say, the number one priority in terms of paying the bills is to pay the interest. So of the roughly 200 billion, and it's actually a little bit more than 200 billion, that the Treasury is collecting each month, 33 billion would first go to the holders of the Treasury debt, which leaves roughly 170 billion to pay for other things, such as Social Security, Medicare, the national defense, or some of the items that they'll pay for first. You see, ladies and gentlemen, roughly somewhere between a third and 35% of every dollar that the United States is spending today has to be financed by debt. That's why this debt has gone up, up, and up significantly. And it's going to go up much, much higher for the simple reason the Federal Reserve has been manipulating the interest rates in general, the term structure of interest rates, by keeping the federal funds rate since December of 2008 at 25 basis points, which is a quarter of a percent. What they're doing is compressing or suppressing the market rate of interest. Because my contention all along, and it's not just me, is that if the Federal Reserve was not interfering in the money markets, remember, interest is the price of money, that the interest rates that the federal government would have to pay would be somewhere between 2 to 3% higher, which means the interest that the Treasury has to pay on the debt would be significantly higher. And the reason why this is important, this squeezes out other spending for other departments. But let me cut to the chase. What is the problem here? Why am I going over this actually several times? Very simple. The federal government is spending beyond the means of the American people, way beyond the means. There's no leadership from either party. There's no courage. There's no integrity. There's no vision. And I'll be even blunter, there's no real understanding amongst the people in the Congress, both in the House of Representatives and the Senate, that you cannot continue doing this. And you must significantly cut federal spending. As a minimum, you should freeze spending at current levels. And that's sort of what they're doing right now with these continuing resolutions. And all a continuing resolution is not a budget. All a continuing resolution does is say continue spending at the current level. It could be higher, it could be lower, but the compromise position, and it's a compromise because the Democrats would like to increase spending and increase taxes, and the Republicans would like to decrease spending and decrease taxes. Well, it's polar opposites. You're not going to get either political party to agree with one another. So the stalemate or position is, okay, we can't increase it, we can't decrease it, we'll keep it where it's at. The problem with that is the Democrats got control of the House and Senate as a result of the 2006 election. And for 2007, 2008, 9, and 10, they control both the House and the Senate, and starting in 2009, the presidency. And they went on a massive spending spree. That's when we had the stimulus package. That's when Obamacare was passed, which is a major new entitlement. And it hasn't worked. The economy still has record high unemployment rates. That's over 7%. Every day President Obama has been in office, the unemployment rate, so-called U3 rate, has been over 7%. It's actually hit a high of 10% for many, many months, nearly half of the time President Obama has been in office. It's been above 9%. It's been over 8%, I think, about three-quarters of the time. Right now, it's 7.3%. And I need to make an observation, assuming the government stays shut until next Monday, you're probably not going to get the monthly unemployment report, which is due out for this. It's due out Friday, so you're not going to get that. And you probably it'll be late getting out the first estimate or advance estimate for the third quarter, which is July, August, and September of the growth in the real domestic product, which is that will get a lot of attention. Now, that's not due out until the last week. Usually comes out on a Thursday, the last week of the month. But it is the first look, if you will, or estimate. And it is admittedly incomplete. But you get a feel for how the economy is growing, and you won't get that until the last week in October. And because of the shutdown, it probably might even be a little bit later than that. It depends how long the shutdown continues. Because I saw an announcement, the Department of Commerce Bureau of Economic Analysis, who's responsible for coming out with the real GDP estimates, said they're not upgrading their website that has a lot of statistics. And I'm sure the Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics did the same thing. So as a result, a lot of these reports will probably be late. Now, how late? It depends how long the shutdown takes place. And maybe I'm being a little optimistic, but I think by Monday, Tuesday at the very latest, the furloughed employees would be told, come on back. In other words, there'll be another continuing resolution. I don't know whether it's going to be for 11 weeks. That would take us through December 15th of this year, or whether the Democrats will get their 6 weeks continuing resolution, which would take us through the 15th of November. Now, if I were the president and the Democrats, I would go for the longer period. And I don't know really why the Senate went for 6 months, six weeks. I think it's in everybody's interest to, people have to plan ahead, is to go with the House's 11-week continuing resolution. The dollar figure is $986 billion. Multiply that by four. 900 billion by four would be, for the entire year, that would be 3.6. But then you got to multiply 86 by four. So you're looking at another roughly 400 billion. That tells me they're funding at a level of about $4 trillion. The problem is they're not going to bring that. They're not going to bring that in terms of revenue. If the economy goes into a recession, and we're overdue for a recession, and I think it's going to happen, you'll be lucky to get $2.5 trillion. See, my fear is not only will we go into a recession, but we'll be back to these deficits where spending, total spending, in excess of total tax revenue collections is over $1 trillion, a matter of fact, in the neighborhood of 1.4 or 1.5 trillion. Not very good, especially if for the last 5 years you've been running deficits of, on average, of about a little over $1 trillion. The United States is broke, and the central problem is overspending. Both parties have spending addiction disorder. Spending addiction disorder. I abbreviate it as SAD. That's the condition. They have spending addiction disorder. And what I mean by that, they're hooked on spending. They literally are unable, completely unable to balance a budget. Neither political party. That's why they have these different versions of the what's called a CR, a continuing resolution. That's not a budget, folks. That just says keep spending at the level you're spending at now. That's all it says. That's fiscally irresponsible. I call it fiscal insanity, and it leads to fiscal chaos, and it ultimately leaves, if we continue doing this, it will lead to a default. Now, you might say, wait a minute, you just told me a minute ago there's no way the federal government can default. Yeah, when you're bringing in about $200 billion each month and your interest on the debt is only about $33 billion, yeah, you have between six and seven times as much money coming in to pay the debt. But as the debt gets bigger and bigger, the interest on the debt gets bigger and bigger. And at some point, the Federal Reserve is going to have to increase the interest rates, including the federal funds rate, if we get in a period where expectations of inflation are high. When that happens, the size, in terms of the total budget, the size of the interest on the debt will go from approximately 6% of the total budget of the United States is for interest. It'll quickly double from 6 to 12 to 18 to 24. Now, it's not going to happen overnight. That will take several years. But as that happens, I call it the debt time bomb goes off. What does that mean? You have only 100%. In terms of the budget. So if the interest portion, think of it as a pie, if the interest portion of that pie initially is 6%, it's going to grow bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like a Pac-Man. It's going to eat up the budgets of other departments. And that will happen if nothing is done about the problem. And I don't see them doing anything. I really don't. Neither party is even coming close to balancing the budget. And that's what needs to be done. Now, I'm realistic. It can't be done in a year. It probably needs to be done over a 3, 4, or 5-year period. But it needs to be done. The worst case situation is free spending where it's at. And that's sort of what we're doing now. Not really, though. In other words, no growth in the federal spending. A freeze. I think we should have it's not my recommended solution, but as an alternative, for 10 years we'll freeze government spending. The problem is the current level of government spending is right in the neighborhood of about $3.6 trillion, which is that's a deficit of over $900 trillion, not quite $1 trillion, which means it's going to take you many years for the economy. What needs to happen is the economy grows, and as the economy grows, tax collections will increase. And over time, what's going to happen, let's say the economy is growing at 3%, which is a historical rate. It's not growing at 3%. The average for the last year it's under 2%. It's about 1.7. You know, it's going to change from quarter to quarter, but it's definitely under 2%. It's less than a third of where it should be, significantly less than a third. But let's say the economy could get back on its historical trend of growth. That's real growth in the gross domestic product, GDP, which is defined as the production of final goods and services for the entire economy. So if the real GDP quarter-to-quarter growth rate could get back to trend, ideally get above trend, there's nothing magical about an average growth rate of 3.3. It's definitely better than where we're at now. We're under 2% quarterly. The last quarter was 2.5, but if you averaged the last four quarters, you're definitely under 2%. I think the number is around 1.6, 1.7, somewhere in that ballpark, which is less, significantly less than 3%. And the reason why I keep harping on this, if you really want to get the unemployment down and the private sector needs to be growing, you need growth rates of 4, 5, 6%. We're not even close to that. Not even close when you're under 2%. Yeah, last quarter, at least the second quarter. We don't have, the last quarter is the third quarter, and we don't have those statistics yet. But the Bureau of Economic Analysis, which is part of the Department of Commerce, came out with their final estimate for the second quarter, and it was 2.5%, which is good. That surprised me. I didn't think it was going to be over 2%. And it's definitely better than the previous quarter, which is 1.7. The point I'm making is this. The size of the federal government must be cut, and the only way you're going to cut that is over a period of 3 to 4 years, cut the budgets of every department and reform entitlements, because that's one of the areas that's a big driver, and that's Social Security and Medicare. And I think what's ultimately going to happen, both of those entitlements are going to be means tested, and they're going to increase the payroll taxes for both programs. That's already happened. But the only way you can get on an actuarially sound foundation is you have to do it, and the sooner you do it, the better. And what's frustrating is, instead of playing these stupid games of a countdown clock, you know, the clock that I would show, and it's at the very top, it's called the U.S. debt clock, and if you click on it, which I'm going to do right now, it'll bring up a clock. It's a very fascinating sight. But in the left-hand corner at the top, it has the U.S. national debt, and that's really going up quickly. And it's at $16,960 billion. Hasn't hit $17 trillion, but it will. Because you look at that clock, it's really spinning. But it has other statistics. I won't get into them, but what I recommend is at the very top of this segment, you click on it, and it'll pop up. You know, one thing that I'm sort of looking at is Treasury securities. That's the debt that's financing the government. That's going up real quick, too. And you have statistics on the money supply, currency, but you also have what the debt is, and that's the debt held by the foreign countries, and that's amazing. That's over $5.5 trillion. So take a few minutes, click on that, it's at the very top of the page, and look at the U.S. debt clock. For those listening, it's the www.usdebtclock.org. So just like I said, it's usdebtclock.org, and you'll get a wealth of information. For example, now the clock's not really moving for the U.S. population, but what they periodically do for some of these statistics is they will update them. It's showing a U.S. population today of over 316 million, and we're getting pretty close to 317 trillion. Not trillion, million. Now, the one I really go to is the one at the very top in that left-hand corner. And on a per-citizen basis, that's over $53,000 for every U.S. citizen. That's a lot of money. And for every taxpayer, because not every citizen pays taxes, on a per taxpayer basis, it's $148,000. So just to put in perspective, what's your share of the national debt? Go to that site and you'll get that information. Now, it looks like I'm going to have to shut down in a minute. And that's why I said today's show is going to be a little shorter than normal. But I have a lot of information on this segment. This is the, I call it the Democratic demands for raising the national debt. And I did not have time to touch upon one solution, not a good solution, but one solution that the U.S. government could resort to. They don't have to raise the national debt. They will. But one of the things that they could do is, I call this Obama's funny money. You could issue, the Treasury could issue currency. And I call it Obama's funny money, and it can have his picture on it. Let's say $100 bills, and you could print them. You could pay the bills that way. Just say they're legal tender. Now, we're not going to do that. We've done that in the past. See, the money we have today are really IOUs of the Federal Reserve System, which is the central bank. They're IOUs. That's what you have in your wallet. It's a note. A note is debt. And the way it works, the Treasury Department will issue debt, and the Federal Reserve will buy it. Buy it. So I'm going to wrap up the show. I hope you have time to read one of Tom Clancy's novels or rent the video and see one of the movies. But remember, if you start that book, start it on a weekend, because you'll probably be reading it Saturday and Sunday going into Monday. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening, and tomorrow's show will start sharply at 4 o'clock. And now back to the music.